Dave and Ryan's movie review and action.
Everyone loves going to the movies. And while some are amazing, some are awful. Fortunately, we have Dave and Ryan, two guys with nothing better to do than watch movies of today and movies of yesterday. So get your popcorn ready, silence your phones, and relax, because the show is about to begin.
Cue Dave and Ryan in 3, 2, 1.
It's Dave and Ryan's movie review.
Sponsored by nobody.
Welcome into another edition of Dave and Ryan's movie review. Take 127, Ryan. 127.
Ooh.
Right? Does that make you feel good?
That sound makes it sound like a fine wine.
It might be. We're aging like a fine wine.
Or moldy cheese.
Screw cap, though.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm down to business. Quickly. Quickly. How was your week?
Super.
Super duper?
Yeah, we had fights last night.
Yeah. How'd that go?
Eh.
Yeah. About like they go.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Some people got punched. Some people got hurt. Some people...
submitted.
Yeah.
And there were probably nachos.
I don't know if they have nachos.
Huh. Who knows? But other than that, a pretty calm week. We are here in the station. Pretty calm week. We're like in between sports seasons.
Yeah.
Football's over and we're kind of waiting for basketball to start.
It's the eye of the storm.
It is. It's just like, wait, everybody's like standing around going, what's going to happen next? Why is it so quiet?
And then we're just waiting for the tsunami to come.
Why is it so quiet? Yeah, because then it's Thanksgiving, it's Christmas, it's sports, it's everything. All right, you ready to get into it?
No, but let's do it anyway.
Let's go to Hollywood.
Welcome to Hollywood Boulevard, the place of glitz, glamour, and dreams. Just kidding. This place is a dump. That's why Dave and Ryan come here each week. You get the news from Hollywood without fearing for your life on the Walk of Fame. It's This Week in Hollywood.
First up, and I found this story kind of actually sad. Francis Ford Coppola is reportedly broke.
But his version of broke is not our version of broke.
I get that part. Because I looked up and everything that I'd looked, because you can go online and look at like net worths and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It spans from $400 million, okay, to the low end I found was $5 million. And this is all stemming from the self-funded Megalopolis, cost him $120 million of his own money. I believe he had to sell off part of his winery to finance this. But there was just a report the last week or a couple of weeks ago that he sold a watch that he was given during Apocalypse Now that's worth like $1 million. He sold that. He had it. And this goes into what you said about his definition of broke is different than ours. He had to sell his island.
Yeah.
For $1.8 million.
You know, I'm not saying that this is a bad thing, but at his age, he's 86 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Should he really be making films?
No, but here's the other thing.
Not that he shouldn't, not that he's not a good director or anything, right. But it's just, is he able to?
I don't know, because remember, where the heck was he that he had to get rushed to the hospital?
Yeah, well, it was for this last one when they filmed one, weren't they?
No, this was just recently. He was over in Europe somewhere, and he had to get rushed to the hospital. But then I got to thinking, yeah, he is. He's 85 years old right now.
Yeah.
He's actually winning the game of life. Why would you want any money left when you die?
Yeah, at his point, instead of going out and, you know, making movies, just write them.
Yeah.
Write it.
Have a good time.
Have your
with
daughter
it.
Go film it.
Oh.
Come on.
Here's the funny part. Here's the thing that I thought was funny. Apparently, whoever gets it, you know, I would assume there's some sort of a trust that all of his stuff goes into from all of his movies and all that stuff. He figures he'll recoup it in 15 to 20 years.
Yeah, well.
He'll get all of his money back.
Well, the Coppola family is not in dire need of.
No. Like I said, the low end that I saw was $5 million.
Yeah.
But, I don't know if that's like liquid.
Yeah, like. Is his brother still alive?
I'm not 100% sure. But like I said, I don't know if that's liquid or if they're looking at like real estate holdings or anything like that. Because he still has I think he still does have part of the winery.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just thought that was, you know, really sad because This is a guy that, I mean, isn't that what you're supposed to do? He's basically, he's going broke because of his art. He wanted to make this movie. He believed in it so much when nobody else would. And he's paying the price for it now.
Yeah, well, at that age, you know, you just become stubborn.
Yes. Well, yeah, because he's not doing himself any favors.
No.
He wanted nobody, he won't let it be streamed on anything. He won't, because he feels like this movie deserves to be seen in IMAX and in IMAX only. That's the problem.
Just release it and make some money back. Jeez. Yeah,
no kidding.
At this point, people just want to see it just for the, you know, the wow factor.
That we've heard so much about it now. Yeah. Maybe he's just trying to hype it up more.
Maybe.
I'm down to my last dime, and I'm going to use it to release this movie into theaters. And then I'll recoup it all. Who knows? Who knows? I would like to still see it. I don't know. There's enough of a cast in it that it would probably be good, I think.
Yeah.
So, the other one, a movie that you and I both really liked, Godzilla Minus One, is getting a sequel, Godzilla Minus Zero, with the same team that's attached, and it's to be released sometime next year. I liked the first one.
Yeah, it was a good one.
It was pretty good, and it's the same team. Of course, they won an Oscar. It's the first time that a Godzilla movie has won an Oscar. And good for them. Yeah, they're saying that it should be released. They're thinking same time next year.
Okay.
So they're obviously already working on it. So that'll be cool. I really like what they did.
For Oscar season.
No. Yeah. Of course. Well, why not? Go for the back-to-back if you can.
Yeah.
All right. So our projection this week is a remake of Arnold Schwarzenegger's movie written by Stephen King, The Running Man, starring Glenn Powell. Josh Brolin is in this one, and it's projected right now to do between 19 and 28 million. What are you thinking, Ryan?
I have some concerns.
Okay.
Like, The Running Man is based off of a book. So is it going to hold more true to the book this time than the other movie?
I would think so, because Stephen King had to choose and approve Glenn Powell to be in this movie.
Yeah, because the last Running Man movie, it was just so over-the-top ridiculous. So I am going to say, 28. I'm going to go 27.
Okay. I'm going to go 25 just out of curiosity, for curiosity's sake. Yeah, because Stephen King, a lot of people know that he has had issues with people taking his books and turning them into movies. Most notably, what Stanley Kubrick did to The Shining. As far as he's concerned, it was a horrible movie.
Even though that's probably one of the best adaptations of his movies.
Probably.
Except for the new It movies.
Oh, goodness. I've watched the first two episodes of that series. And the third one was released. I can't bring myself to watch it. That is how disturbing the first two episodes were. I'm going to tell you. It was nuts.
I'm going to take your word for it.
Yeah, you're not going to watch it?
Nope.
I don't know. The one that was on, I don't know. Did you ever catch The Shining when it was the miniseries on ABC?
No.
It was not terrible. And Stephen King said that was better than Kubrick's one.
Okay.
But they also had like 5 hours to tell the whole story.
Yeah. Well, see, what are there some other Stephen King?
The Stand.
I don't remember that one.
They've done that a couple of different times.
Wasn't like the Black Tower?
The Dark Tower.
The Dark Tower. That one was horrible.
Yes, it was. And that, with the cast that was in it, you expected more. You had Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey were in that one.
Yeah.
Christine, the going way, way back.
Was Carrie one of his?
Carrie is his. Yeah. So, I mean,
the TV series wasn't that bad.
No. No, it wasn't terrible. But, yeah, like I said, it's the same thing with The Shining, the miniseries. He had more time to go into it, and maybe that's why it was better. Maybe that's why he liked it better.
Yeah, you know, with the movie, you're limited, unless you're going to split it up into sequels, mm-hmm. you're limited with the amount of time and what you can.
And it's really hard to continue even. You know, other genres are okay, but a horror movie, it's really hard to continue as a sequel.
Yeah.
They did, like I said, they hit the nail on the head with It. I thought the second chapter two was better than the first one. So, and you're going to take my word for that too also.
Yeah, sure. I haven't seen the second one. I saw the first one.
So, just on a side note, over the weekend, last weekend, I watched a really good miniseries, and you know how I am when it comes to historical things. Mm. Death by Lightning. Michael Shannon is in this one. Matthew McFadden is in this one. And it's the story of James Garfield's assassination.
Okay.
Kind of interesting. Four episodes, so it's about 4 hours long. If you're looking for something to do and sit up and curl in the house and watch it, give that one a watch.
Yeah.
It's easy to burn through
it. Cold weekend.
It's easy to burn through that one. All right, box office week ending 11-9. Coming in at number five is the Russell Crowe-led Nuremberg, coming in at $4.1 million. Sarah's Oil, which was a new release this week, comes in at $4.4 million. The Black Phone 2 hits us at $5.3 million. At number two, it's Regretting You, $7.1 million, bringing its total to $38.5 million. And the number one movie was actually our projection for last week. Now, Predator Badlands was projected to do between $25 and $30 million. I said $26 million. Ryan?
I'd said 20, and they knocked this out of the park.
$40 million, $80 million worldwide for this
movie. We told you it was good, even though the guy on YouTube didn't like it.
It was good.
I'm pretty sure he didn't see it.
Yeah, come correct if you're gonna go on after we've given us a after we've given a review on something. Tell us why you didn't like it. Just don't go on there and say I saw it. It sucked.
Yeah, that just shows your IQ level. Give us a reason why.
Give us the reason behind it.
No, I didn't like it because it was bad.
Right. Not a good review. I love this one.
Don't be a Magoo.
And like I told Ryan, I think I even said it during the review, I'm going to have to go back now and watch these Predator movies because I kind of walked away from them.
Yeah, well, we before the show started, we kind of went over the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a few movies I forgot about.
Yeah, I found a timeline of chronologically when you're supposed to watch them. Not like when they were released, but according to the film, when you're supposed to watch them. So pretty interesting stuff there. All right. Well, we haven't heard from the man in the dark room for a while. And so I thought we'd dust this one off because you're not going to find a movie that's much worse than this.
Welcome in to another Honest Movie Review. Today we go back to 2000 for the American science fiction film Battlefield Earth, starring John Travolta.
When we attacked your planet, all your soldiers and all their advanced technology could only put up a measly 9-minute fight before they were exterminated. Which is why man is an endangered species.
The best way for me to describe this movie would be a cross between Star Wars and poop. I can't wait to speak with you again next week.
This was, the height of John Travolta getting on his Scientology high horse.
I remember seeing the trailer and being so excited for this movie because if I remember correctly, it came out somewhere around the same times as Starship Troopers and stuff like that. It was in that era. And so I was like, oh, this is going to be another cool sci-fi movie. And then you're just like, what's in their nose?
And it wasn't. It wasn't a cool sci-fi movie.
No.
And it dealt, like I said, he was at the height of his Scientology.
Why is everything so blue?
The only thing this movie was missing was Tom Cruise, really.
Yeah.
And maybe that would have made the movie. This would be like taking the story of the pioneers crossing the nation and landing in Utah and turning it into an action Western.
Ooh, we should do that.
That wouldn't work, I don't think.
Yeah, it's called Horizon.
There you go. See, I didn't even have to tell him. He just comes with the jokes. So today we're going to do a review of Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein. I can't really say enough good about this movie. This is a great looking movie. And I think that it's got a lot of things that Ryan appreciates because there's not a lot of CGI in this movie. There's the boat that they're on was built. That was a set. His laboratory was a set. So these are really cool things. And this was a great movie. I love the way it broke it down. We're going to talk about that when we come back.
So what you're saying is they used sets?
They used sets, yeah. They didn't use a green screen and fill it all in. Wow. Who knew?
That's usually how a movie's made.
But
well, not superhero movies. Well, but regular movies, that's how they're made, Dave. Well,
they brought a man back to life, and they didn't use CGI. Explain that to me.
I will.
Okay. So we're going to talk about that. And then, you know, I found every now and then I'll come across an article and I'll throw it in a file and I'll be like, we'll talk about this. And I came back across this. So we're going to talk about movies that are darn near perfect. There's a whole list of them out there.
I think me and you have different opinions on that.
Well, this is a list. It's not my personal opinion. It's a list.
And where did you find this list?
I found it on the internet. It's got to be true. It was like Variety or Hollywood or Deadline Hollywood or Hollywood Reporter. But it's got movies that we've heard of and movies that I know we've seen. You know, that, okay. Like, spoiler, they've got Forrest Gump in there as a darn near perfect movie. It's possible, but we'll talk about that. And then we're going to close with, you know, we're heading into that season of Oscar movies and holiday movies and things like that. So we're going to pick a couple of movies that are coming up that are holiday movies that are coming out and that I think it'll be great for the whole family with Thanksgiving and Christmas and all those things. So when we come back, though, we're going to be talking about Frankenstein review here on Dave and Ryan's Movie Review.
Everyone on set, shut up. Shut up. These two buffoons are about to talk about a new release. Dave and Ryan's Movie Review, Segment 1. Action.
What's more exciting than a brand new release to the movie theater? According to Dave and Ryan, nothing. They're the first to see it, so you're the first to hear about it.
Welcome back to Dave and Ryan's Movie Review, and now it is the movie review portion of our show. And
yeah?
Today, today we're going to talk about Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein. This one's rated
that's
R.
That's the one we're watching?
That's the right one. You don't want to know.
Everyone missed the other take.
Thank God for editing. That's all I'm going to say. We could have done it again. It's okay. This one is on Netflix, rated R, 2 hours, 32 minutes. Oscar Isaac, Jacob Elordi, Bea Goth, Christoph Waltz is in this one. Anybody else that you can pop in and remember?
Not off the top of my head, but yeah, it was a good one.
So this one is a story that has been told many, many times.
A tale as old as time.
I was going to say tale as old as time, but this one has been told and retold as, of course, the adaptation of Mary Shelley's novel Frankenstein.
Have you ever read the book?
I've read bits and pieces of it. I'll be totally honest with you.
How does this compare to the book? Is it close? The closest to the book?
It's probably, I don't know, because, you know, here's the thing when you get into things like this, especially this movie in particular, it goes into such detail that you want to think that it's probably the closest one to the book. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. After you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The thing that I liked the most about it, and I don't think we need to really get into the story of Frankenstein, because everybody should know the story of Frankenstein.
He
crazy
was dead,
guy.
He got built, he got mad, rawr, people died.
Yeah, and at the end there's a redemption arc, I guess. I don't know, but I liked how it broke it into different stories.
Yeah, it you get the first part was Dr. Frankenstein's version of the story of basically the story from his side, and then halfway through it switches and you get the monster's perspective.
And it gives you a little bit of background into Victor and how he grew up and all of those kinds of things. And then, yeah, and he makes it like his quest almost to chase this thing down.
Yeah, because his mother died giving birth to his brother, and he felt that his father basically let her die because he was the most talented, most known, most honored doctor of his time, and he still let her die.
And he was what's the word I'm looking for?
Use your words.
He was a baron.
Yeah,
he was a member of the aristocracy, and yes, he was a very famous physician of the day, and that's kind of where he kept trying to teach Victor, and Victor and him had this kind of disagreement, and that's kind of where their stories separate a little bit, because
yes and no, he was still being taught by his father, but their philosophies changed at that point.
The thing about it is, what was I going to say? I got from this, I mean, I know the story's been out there for years and years and years, but I got an Anakin Skywalker vibe. Because all the times where he talked about he will, you know, be able to cheat death. He will move on, and death is just, death will not stop anybody. And so that's kind of where I took that from, you know, the Anakin Skywalker
thing. Okay, I didn't get that at all.
You didn't get that at all?
No.
Okay. But anyway, yeah, I loved how it broke it down, and it talked about Victor, and then it leads up to a certain point where they're face-to-face, and then it shifts.
Yeah.
And then it goes back, and now you get the monster's story, or the creature, I guess, is what they refer to him as. And it just follows through his... You didn't have the moment of him and the little girl. You did, but it was with the blind guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, you still had a moment, but it just wasn't with who you thought it was going to be.
Right, and it was... he was hiding in a house that had a mill, and... You know, there's a gentleman that was a blind gentleman who everyone kind of, he tells everybody that he just wants them to leave. He stays there all winter and is by himself. And so this winter, he's not there by himself. And the creature comes out and they kind of start a friendship. And he teaches the creature how to read and everything, which was really strange because that was one of the reasons that Victor turned his back on the creature.
Yeah, well, the kind of add on to that, when he first escapes the fire, he's in the forest and he's getting shot at by the old man's relatives, and so he finds his house, hides in it, and then over time he becomes like the spirit of the forest to them, like, you know, he. They need to gather more firewood for the winter. And so, like, the next day, there's, like, just tons of bundles of firewood everywhere for them. He fixes the corral for the sheep, you know. And he, you know, and the old man knows he's there. He has, like, some sort of, so he can sense his presence or whatever.
Right.
And so when he's teaching the little girl to read and he's holding up flashcards, he makes sure he holds them up high enough and flips him around so there's a little hole in the wall behind him that the monster can see, and he's learning to speak as well. And then when the family leaves to go back, that's when, like, you know, he really learns how to read, because he kind of knew how to talk just from observing, but then this is when he really, and he read a whole bunch of books that all winter.
Yeah, the first book he read was the Bible, and then he just kind of goes on from there. The last book that I remember them talking to him about was, I think it was Paradise Lost.
Yeah.
And it starts talking about all those things. So then he decides he's going to go off and see what Victor is doing, because that's what the old man said. He goes, you know, go find out what's going on. And then he comes to find out that he is this thing that was created.
Yeah.
And so now he's furious and he tracks Victor down, and then it just...
Well, he tracks him down and he wants Victor to do something for him.
Yes, he wants a companion.
Yeah.
And so it was such a great film. I don't want to get too much into it, although people know the story. I don't want to get too much into what happens in the movie and the different elements and things like that that happen into it. I think they released it at the right time. As we spoke, they talked about they released it in theaters so it could be, you know, that Oscar window and those kinds of things. I think that this may win. If it doesn't win for any acting, because I don't know. There was a lot of great performances in this. I think it will for, you know, cinematography, maybe for set design and those kinds of things, because they were beautiful. I thought it was beautiful. From your angle, what did you think of, like, the sets and the cinematography?
So I want to go back to a thing you said in the last segment. You said that there was no CGI used in this.
I didn't say there was a lot of CGI.
You said there was no CGI.
Okay.
And you were wrong.
Okay.
Because there was a lot used in this. They used it for scene enhancement, so to extend the scene. They used it for sky replacement because the sky looked beautiful in this. Mm-hmm. Every time it showed the sky, it looked beautiful. So they do that, and then plus all the animals, the wolves.
You don't think those wolves were real?
No, the mice, the deer, you know, all that was all CGI. They did do a lot of practical effects, but Del Toro's known for implementing both,
mm-hmm.
which he does a good mixture of both. Or like the part where he tears out that guy's jaw, that was a mixture of practical and CGI, which looked good. But like the deer and the wolves and stuff like that and the mice, you could tell they were a little gummy-ish.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, other than that, you know, the scene extension, because, you know, they don't have, you know, 18, 17... Or is it Germany? Is it? It seems like they were
in Austria.
Austria
is where he ended up. That's where Victor went.
Yeah, I want to say they were in France to begin with.
I'm not. You could have been. Yeah. Makes sense.
But yeah, like, you know, just to make it look, and then like the big battle scene when they're looking for bodies and stuff like that. You know, all that's, you know, was CGI. But the cinematography was amazing. If they don't win it for that, I'd be surprised. I do think they have a very good shot. I'm just trying to think of other films of a lead actor. Because thinking of some of the other movies that have come out, I don't think there's anyone else who, you know, basically grabbed your attention like he did.
And who would you give lead actor to? The creature or to Oscar Isaac?
Oscar Isaac.
Okay. Because I would say I think Jacob Elordi did an amazing job.
He did.
In this. Doesn't have a lot of dialogue, but what he does and what he finally gets to, you know, hits home.
Yeah.
It really does.
Isaac had to not only do physical acting, but he had to do, you know, he had to bring you in emotionally, you know.
That's true.
Where with the monster, everything was just physical.
Yeah, and we watched it, like I told you, I had to go back and watch it again because I watched it late one night with my daughter when she came home, and the next morning we were talking about it. She goes, "You will hate Oscar Isaacs after this movie."
No, you won't.
I says, to a certain extent, okay, but you get that redemption at the end, at the very, very end, where he's sitting there talking to him in the ship. You get that. So I agree that, you know, there is one thing that comes out of this, and his brother tells him that. He goes, "I was always afraid of you.
Yeah.
You are the monster."
I will say this. If Oscar Isaac did that for, you said it was your daughter,
mm-hmm.
then he did his job.
Yes.
'Cause if you leave absolutely hating or loving a certain character, they did their job.
Absolutely.
But you got to realize, actor.
Mm-hmm.
He's not that person.
Right.
You know, and
it's like when people hated Tom Hanks after Elvis.
Yeah. That, and you know, like with Game of Thrones, people hated Joffrey, or like with
Harry Potter, Malfoy. I think Joffrey really is that way in real life. I've never run into him on the street, but I'm pretty sure.
If Dave saw me, just punch him in the face.
But no, I thought this was a really good movie. I've watched it twice already. I will probably watch it again.
It's a very good one. I definitely recommend.
I'm giving this one 4.5 out of 5.
Ooh, 4.5.
I really liked it that much. I did.
I am going to give this one a solid, I'm torn between 3.5 and 4. So I'll give it 3.5.
Okay. So yeah, go see this one. It's on Netflix right now. And you know, this is one of those movies that they talk about forever because they first started talking about this movie in 2023.
Yeah.
I think it lived up to the hype.
It definitely did a lot better than Horizon.
Yes. There's Horizon reference number 2 on the show. All right, when we come back, we have a list that I have put together, and we're going to talk about, I found a couple of articles that talked about it, and I just want to kind of bounce it off of Ryan. I know we're going to have a lot of arguments in this one. This should be fun, though. About 10 movies that are darn near perfect. Okay.
In your opinion.
In other people's opinions too, not just mine. Well, that's when we come back on Dave and Ryan's Movie Review.
Hey, idiots. We're back from commercial. Dave and Ryan's Movie Review, segment 2, and action.
All right, welcome back to Dave and Ryan's Movie Review. And now we're going to talk about some movies that, you know, I found a couple of articles and I tried to like compile some. So I didn't really just go off of one complete article. So I did look at other articles. I only sent you the one, but I did look at some other articles. And this is, they're calling them, the headline of the article is movies that are considered to be almost flawless. But I'm going to say movies that are darn near perfect.
Now, you're the one who compiled all these. Do you agree?
With the list that I've got here, I do.
Okay.
I do.
Prepare to defend yourself, Dave.
That's right. Well, the first one I'm going to let you defend because it's your guy, the Grand Budapest Hotel.
It's a good movie.
Let's talk about that because I can tell you what they thought of it, and then we can kind of go and say, and you can say, yeah, that's probably pretty close there.
First of all, I don't care what they say.
Okay, what do you think?
I don't know those people.
What do you think?
For me, I thought this was a great movie. It was a great use of color, camera movement. The actors were just amazing. Every actor in this did an amazing job. I can't really think of one person that you go, oh, they did an okay job. Can you?
No, I can't because here's the thing. It's a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah.
And for some people, for some reason, excuse me, people line up to do Wes Anderson movies.
Yeah, he's kind of like, I'm not going to say he's like the new Woody Allen, but, you know, he's got that same type of, like, you know, cult following with actors. Because back in the day, every actor wanted to be in a Woody Allen movie.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, I think what it is, it's not just the story, because the story, all of his movies have great stories
mm-hmm.
and great character design. I think it's more of when you're filming, you're having fun.
Well, and you know
you're with a bunch of people that you like, and you're all doing the same job, and you're just having fun.
Well, and I think, too, that I think one of the reasons that people flock to Wes Anderson movies to be in them is, like you said, they're having fun, but the films are fun. They're quirky. They're different.
Yeah.
They have these different characters in them that people are like, you know, they may be off the wall and totally strange, but you could look at them and say, I know somebody like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, the reason why I think I would defend this as a near perfect, or I won't even say near perfect, as a really, really great example of a good film is because of the use of color, the camera movement, and the character design.
Well, and I'll be honest, I don't like the title of their article. Flawless is, that's saying a lot about a movie.
Yeah.
It really is. All right, next on the list is Jaws. And we talked about this because of the fact I think that it is pretty perfect. This movie is 50 years old, and it is still scaring people to this day. Plus, as you brought up, there's a lot of things that Spielberg did in this movie.
Yeah, well, most people are afraid of sharks or have some sort of fear of sharks. And this is the movie that gave them that fear. It's just basically the unknown under the water. You know, you're pretty much helpless in the water. So, yeah, you're going to have a fear. But so for me, this is a very good example of camera movement. One of the greatest shots that whenever you see, and it's used everywhere, is the Hitchcock effect. When they're on the beach, so the camera is pushing forward and the lens is zooming out. And that's when you get that kind of vertical effect when Officer Brody is at the beach and the shark attacks and he sees, grab that little boy, and you get that like little vertical effect on him. That's what that is. And not only that, just I do know this was on accident because Spielberg would have liked the shark in a few more of the shots, but it was broke for almost the entire movie. So just the building, the suspense, they had they basically had to pivot on the fly and build that suspense for the whole movie.
Well, and another thing that built the suspense in the movie is the music.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, it's eerily, you know, that movie is, that music is now tied to, oh my God, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
it really is. So that's next on the list. Yeah, and plus the performances, you had Roy Scheider, you had Richard Dreyfuss in this one. Great movie. Great movie. I just watched it again, like I said, this last summer. Fantastic movie. All right, the next movie on my list is going to get maybe some groans from some people because, well, it's an action movie, and it's John Wick. John Wick has a great story. You got to go past his, you know, the fact that they killed his dog. You've got to go past that. This is a guy that's dealing with the loss of his wife. And this dog was the only connection that he had to his wife. And so it goes into that. Plus, you also add in the camera angles and the camera work that happened on this film and all the action sequences and just everything kind of combined together to make a pretty good movie.
Yeah, to make a pretty good movie, but an almost flawless movie.
No. That's why I said I don't agree with the title of the thing.
I will say John Wick is a good movie, but I don't think it. I don't think it belongs on this list. I do know Keanu Reeves did a lot of training and practice. You know, to learn how to use firearms correctly and to do all the stunts. The story is good, but it's not an original story. You know, a guy, wife dies, something happens to him. He wants revenge. Not, you know, it's been done a million times. So story-wise, I would say no. It still is a good movie. I just don't think it belongs here.
Okay. The next one that I put on the list is the Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. Now, this movie won 11 Oscars, including Best Picture. The story, everybody knows the story. It's not an original story by any stretch of the imagination. But I think that following along and the emotion that the actors put into the film, plus with the camera work, the cinematography, the locations, all of that came together to make a pretty good movie. And you don't like Lord of the Rings anyway.
I never said that.
Oh, okay.
I don't like it as much as some people do.
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, a lot of the Lord of the Rings movies are a little overrated. Yes, they did put a lot of time, you know, they took a few, was it a year and a half out of their lives to go down to New Zealand and film this for?
It was 3 years, I think, because they made three movies. They made them all back to back to back sequentially.
Yeah, I thought it only took a year and a half. I'm not sure how long. I'd have to go back, but yeah, I think there's a few actors I would change out, mainly one that I just can't stand, but I know a lot of people like him, so I won't say it, but he played Rudy.
That kid from the Goonies.
Yeah, that guy from the Goonies. You know, I don't think he's a good actor, but some people like him. The music was good. You know, if you're looking for a trilogy, I would say the original Star Wars trilogy is the greatest trilogy. And I know a lot of people will debate me on that and say the Lord of the Rings trilogy is. And that's fine. If that's your thing, then cool with you. I will say this is The Return of the King.
Yes.
I would say that it's not my favorite, but it's still a pretty good one.
There is one scene in this movie that gets me every time.
Is it the spider?
No. It's the scene where Aragorn finally shows up on the ship with the ghost army.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable, the way that they put that together and the special effect of him running off that ship and then them just kind of showing up.
Yeah.
That was a pretty cool effect. I liked that part. So that part I enjoy.
So do you agree it should be on this list?
I think so. Okay. I think so. All right. One of your favorites I know is up next, and it's Pulp Fiction.
This is a horrible movie.
And I want to know why you think it's a horrible
movie. I've already gave my... If you want to know why, go back and watch our podcast or listen to our podcast. This is a horrible movie. I don't know why people like it so much. It's the story is basically just it's John Travolta's last day alive and he dies and people are like, oh no, it's not. Yes, it is. It's you follow him throughout the entire story and then he dies at the end. The movie's about him.
That's one way to look at it. I've never looked at it that way. I'll be totally honest with you. I think the main reason that people keep talking about this is because the way that it is told, and now you've seen a few more movies and you probably saw some movies like it before, that it was told in these little vignettes.
No,
and all these vignettes tied together.
I'm pretty sure this is it had been attempted.
Mm-hmm.
I will say it's been attempted, but this is the first time that it was semi-successful.
And
now I will say Quentin Tarantino. I do like some of his other films, but this one's just
this one
not,
didn't do and it for you.
I know so many. It, you know, it's got a big cult following, and it's just a no for me.
I have something interesting to say about that cult following because I think I know what one of the main focal points of people, why people like this movie so much.
What is that?
The soundtrack.
Yeah.
This was one of those soundtracks that you couldn't get out of your head.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But I just liked, like I said, I liked how it was all put together. I liked how you had these different stories and at the end they meshed up.
Yeah. I'm going to say I don't think it belongs here.
You don't think it belongs here? Perfect. All right, next on the list, and I had to go back and watch this after we saw the Furiosa, Mad Max Fury Road.
Okay. This one was, you know, it was the reboot, trying to start everything afresh.
Mm-hmm.
It had its moments, you know. Speaking of building off of Quentin Tarantino, he said something that made me think, and it's true. Australians know how to make a car scene.
Definitely. A car scene.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And this is a great example of that. They do a great job when it comes to crazy car scenes. And the only reason it's on this list, then yeah, I agree.
Their reasoning is the action and the effects. Put it a cut above everything else.
Okay, I will agree.
And the cinematography is great.
The cinematography is okay.
But you've got a wide open space like Australia. How could your cinematography not be? Yeah.
Besides those two things, I don't think it's, you know, a near flawless. It's a good movie, but no, I wouldn't put it on this list.
All right. Next up on the list, The Big Lebowski. This is a fun movie. Whether it's flawless or not, I don't know.
Dave, you tell me why you think it belongs here.
Why do I think? I think it's one of those movies like we just talked about with Pulp Fiction. I think it's got this cult following now. You've got people that dress up like Jeff Daniels for Christmas.
Yeah.
Mostly
but just because
it's
got a cult following doesn't mean it's a flawless movie.
And the story was all over the place. And I think that's why people remembered it. Because you don't know what's going on. Is it a thing of misinformation? Is it a they've got the wrong guy? I mean, what is it really about? And then you've got just off the wall characters in it, like right now her Julianne Moore, just an off the wall character that hops into this thing. But you've got that core of Jeff Bridges and is it John Turturro? Steve Buscemi,
yeah.
and John Goodman, and then the antagonist to them, whether they're bowling alley, it's
I know it's John. I always slaughter his last
name. I can't remember if it's John or what, but it's one of those movies that you watch and you're like, okay. Plus, it's a Coen Brothers movie, and some people just flock to Coen Brothers movies. And do I think it belongs on this list over Fargo? No, I love Fargo. That movie was fantastic. It's just weird. And that's, I think you go back to that and you could kind of compare some of the Coen Brothers movies to Wes Anderson movies in that aspect. That he's got these characters in it that are just, you know, little Magoo.
This is one of the reasons I don't like lists and articles like this, because it's basically one person's opinion.
Sure it is.
And he will give you examples of why he thinks it is.
Absolutely.
If you're honestly, like, for the longest time, the greatest movie and most perfect movie ever made for the longest time was Citizen Kane.
Yes.
And it wasn't just one person saying that. It was the entire
Academy.
It's
on top of AFI lists.
Yeah. Everyone, you know, they got a bunch of critics and everyone decided that. This, you know, nowadays you can post anything you want on the internet.
Sure.
Hell, this podcast goes on the internet. You can make your own list, but if it's just you doing it by yourself, say that in the title. This is my opinion of why I think these movies are good. But no, I don't think The Big Lebowski belongs
on
this
list.
Yes, it had a good story and like some of the effects, like the fantasy effects, like when he's the Viking, the Valkyries and all that, and they're flying or whatever. It's all weird and trippy. But other than that, no. The story is, like you said, it's all over the place. That's not perfect.
No, it's not.
No, so no, I don't think it belongs
here. You don't think it belongs on here? Okay.
And whoever made this list is an idiot.
Here's another one that you probably are going to say does not belong on this list, and I just thought it was quirky because it's a Marvel movie. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. The story was good. He finally finds out who his dad is, but then he finds out that his dad's kind of a jackass, so to speak. And so he's dealing with that. Finds out that his dad is not a good person. Then he finds out that his dad killed his mom. And so plus we go back to the Pulp Fiction thing, the music. James Gunn has made a living off of putting great music in his movies.
Yeah.
So does that mean that it should be on the list? No. There's probably other Marvel movies that I would put on the list ahead of this one.
Yeah.
My wife knows what we're talking about. But I think the story's good. I think it gives you some background and maybe a little bit of closure for Peter Quill's character. But it's there.
Yeah, I don't think it belongs on this list. Not one bit. I'm not a big Guardians fan.
Uh-huh.
I know you and Jordan.
That other guy.
Yeah, the other guy. You know, you guys absolutely love the Guardians series, and that's fine. But I thought the first one was better. Okay. The third one was just meh, and this one was... You know, not even Kurt Russell could save this movie.
I think the third one for me was meh because you knew it was over after that.
Yeah.
And so you went in with that.
But they left it open for a sequel.
Well, they did. And he will return. They even said it in the movie. So.
Yeah.
All right. This one, I thought it was quirky. I know that you like it. You've talked about it before. Hot Fuzz. So let's talk about Hot Fuzz.
Yeah. I like this movie. I won't say I've never claimed that it's a near perfect movie, but it's a good, you know, comedy movie. It'll make you laugh. someone who is an overachiever gets sent down to basically the minor leagues or out into the country to be, you know, not live the action packed life that he wants and accidentally uncovers a murder ring.
Well, and I'll give you the reasoning this guy says. It's the script.
Yeah. The story and the best screenplays out there. The story and the actors did a very good job.
Well, you get Nick Frost and Simon Pegg together, you're going to have a good time regardless of how the script is. I mean, I even enjoyed their little Star Wars thing. So.
Yeah, of course you would. But yeah, you just, you know, Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, they're just, you know, every generation has like a comic duo. That's just amazing. You know, we had Walter Matthau and
Jack Lemmon.
Jack Lemmon was a good one. Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. You know, there's this comedy duos that are just amazing. And these two are the comedy duo of our generation. And I don't think it belongs on a near perfect list, but it definitely belongs on a list of top movies.
All right. So out of every movie that's on this list, I think this one probably deserves to be on it the most.
I doubt it.
Schindler's List.
You just had to let me bite myself in the foot before you said it.
I just think that it is a great film. I think that it is a film that... You know, this is one of those films that you go into a theater and you learn something and you're being preached to. You're not necessarily being preached to, but you're learning history. And usually those kind of films bother me. This one, I think this is a fantastic film. I think this is actually a movie that should be shown in schools, to be totally honest with you. I really do.
It was a good film. It's definitely... I think it belongs in the conversation for flawless movie or, you know, near perfect or whatever you want to call it. It's not one of my favorite movies, but it's still a movie that I think everyone, like you said, everyone should see it at least once.
At least one time.
You know, I know not a lot of people like the color scheme.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's kind of what makes the movie.
Yeah.
Is him deciding to shoot it in black and white is what makes the movie. Yeah. So,
and I know a lot of people, you know, don't like that, especially nowadays. You know, we don't get a whole lot of black and white movies.
No.
I think the last black and white movie was...
the last big one that I can think of is The Artist.
Yeah. I was trying to think of that one, but for some reason The Pianist came in my head. I was like, it's not The Pianist.
No, it's The Artist.
The Artist.
Yeah. So there's a list. Everybody's got a list in their mind of what they think is a perfect movie.
Yeah. Submit, give it, you know, send us your top 10.
Yeah. Get on Facebook, get on YouTube. Tell
not
us
necessarily flawless, but your favorite top tens and why.
Why?
You know, not just...
I saw like, this, it sucked.
Yeah, you know, give us a reason. Don't just, don't be blank-minded. You know, have an opinion. If you agree with us, tell us. If you don't agree with us, tell us. But give us a reason why, not just...
That's what we're here for.
Well, some of us are here.
All right.
Dave will read them, and then he'll translate them for me.
There you go.
In storybook
pictures. I will draw him pictures with crayon. We'll be good. All right, coming up, it is slowly starting to sneak into that Thanksgiving, Christmas, holiday season.
Getting a little cold outside.
It is. So we picked four movies, and we're going to kind of talk about them when we come back on Dave and Ryan's Movie Review.
All right, imbeciles. Everyone quiet down. Dave and Ryan's Movie Review, segment 3, and action.
All right, so we'll have to go through these really quick. But, you know, the holiday season is right around the corner. Thanksgiving, yeah. I've started slimming down so I can fill my cheeks back up, so to speak.
He's like a squirrel.
That's right. And, you know, an important thing about the holiday season is, you know, you have a lot of free time with your family and everything.
That's not necessarily a good thing.
It's not. But go out and see a movie.
If you need to escape, go see a movie.
Go see a movie. First on the list, we're getting another SpongeBob SquarePants movie.
Why?
The Search for SquarePants.
Why?
I don't know. Because they wanted to, I guess.
The little kids off and then go see something else.
This one will hit theaters on December 19th. It's an hour 36 minutes long. Everybody's in this one. And it doesn't look like the cartoon. It looks like it's computer animated. I think the last one was that way as well.
Yeah.
But it's the story of SpongeBob trying to become brave. And goes out looking for SquarePants. Because they bring the Flying Dutchman back. You remember him from the... Have you ever watched SpongeBob? I'm sure
no,
you have.
No.
You've never watched SpongeBob.
No, that was...
Oh, my
that
goodness.
Was after my time.
Yeah, but it's still on today, so how can it be after your time? It's never stopped airing.
Because I'm not stupid. Because
you're grown?
Yeah, and I like, you know, I don't like...
Okay, you have a thing for Tom Kenny. We get it.
Yeah.
All right, next on the list. This one is an older movie, but they are going to re-release it in theaters on December 12th. How the Grinch Stole Christmas with Jim Carrey.
Okay, aren't they making another live action?
There was talk of it. I remember them talking about it, but I haven't heard anything solid on that. They had the animated one with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Uh-huh.
But this one looks... This is a good movie. It's fun. It really is. And, you know, my heart grew 3 sizes the day that I saw this movie. So it's not too bad. The big one that a lot of people are hanging their hats on that everybody wants to go see is Zootopia 2.
Yeah, that one, hopefully... You know, hopefully Disney hasn't already deemed it a failure.
And just in time for Thanksgiving, it comes out the 26th of November.
Ooh.
We talked about this briefly, but I mean, the people that are in this movie, Jennifer Goodwin, Jason Bateman, Kihei Kwan, Fortune Feimster, Andy Samberg, David Strathairn, Idris Elba. You've got Tommy Chong is in this one. Macaulay Culkin is hiding in this one. I just read the other day that The Rock is in this one. There's a couple of other pro wrestlers that are in this one that play police officers in it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
That makes me worried.
Danny Trejo's in this. There. Should be good then.
No.
A good family film with Danny Trejo.
If it's stocked with celebrity.
Are they trying to make
appearance?
Up for a script that's just not there?
Yeah, that's what it makes me think. I'm not saying that it is because I haven't seen it, but that's just, you know, that just sends off, you know, a little red flag in my mind.
Okay, so that one is coming out once again, as I said, November 26th. And then the other one, November 22nd, 21st.
These are your words.
Wicked for Good. The finish, the wrap up of Wicked.
Yay, ding dong, the witch is dead.
She will die in this one. There is no spoilers. Everybody should know the story of Wicked and the Wizard of Oz. This one's 2 hours and 18 minutes long.
I still haven't seen the first one.
You need to see the first one. You probably
do I have to
should.
See the first one to know what's going on in this one?
Yes, I'm going to say that you have to. So, there, you know, it is what it is. The movie is a phenomenon. It's a Broadway musical come to life. It's a Broadway musical that for some reason they decided that they had to double the length of it to make two movies out of it. So they could get that, you know, $10 out of us twice, or 12 or 50 or whatever it is out of us twice. So those are just some movies that are coming out towards the end of the year that are geared more towards families. And get out and enjoy the holiday season, really. Really. Yeah. Why not, right?
Yeah.
All right, before we get out of here, make sure you like and subscribe. Follow us on our Facebook page and our YouTube channel, Dave and Ryan's Movie Review. And until next time, go see a movie. Thank you, Chewbacca.
And that brings us to the end of this week's journey. But don't worry, Dave and Ryan have more movies to watch and more opinions to spew next week. You can relive today's episode at CastleCountryRadio.com. Thanks for joining us on Ryan and Dave's Movie Review.
Ah, the hell with it. Send it in, we're done. See you next week.